The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Patricia for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Time Magazine. Today's program is supported by G. Suggs Insurance, a SureVest insurance group company. They can be reached at gsuggsinsurance.com, that is gsuggsinsurance.com. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the Time Magazine edition, dated December 29, 2025. It's the Person of the Year edition of Time, which includes some individuals, notably the architects of AI. As usual, the front cover is bordered in red with a narrow white inner border. The background, then, is in an icy blue-gray-white coloration with Time in large block capital lettering superimposed in a slightly darker gray, but still not even medium dark gray. Person of the Year is the caption. The Architects of AI is the subcaption, and there's a picture of a large scaffold with AI written by virtue of mechanical-looking objects. Several stories high, this includes a scaffolding, includes a stairway and places where people can stand. And some are standing in groups and some are standing singly or in couples. Yellow hard hats are prevalent. We don't really see any facial characteristics. We're looking at this from a distance. In the imagery, in the illustration, and within the A and the I are what I think are computer components. There are hoses, cables, actually, and then other things that are look like rectangles and wires and other items that would make up a large computer. And that's it. It's AI. It's the Person of the Year. AI. There will be following now a few shorter articles about AI and then some more Person of the Year items of interest, and in this case some Culture of the Year interest. Ideas. AI's Next Frontier is Here by Fei-Fei Li, L.I., who is the co-director of Stanford's Human-Centered AI Institute and CEO of World Labs. In 1950, when computing was little more than automated arithmetic and simple logic, Alan Turing, T-U-R-I-N-G, asked a question that reverberates today. Can machines think? It took remarkable imagination to see what he saw. Intelligence might someday be built rather than born. That insight launched a relentless scientific quest called artificial intelligence. 25 years into my own career, I still find myself inspired by Turing's vision. But how close are we? The answer is not simple. Today, leading AI technology, such as large language models, LLMs, has begun to transform how we access and work with abstract knowledge. Yet they remain wordsmiths in the dark, eloquent but inexperienced, knowledgeable but ungrounded. For humans, spatial intelligence is the scaffolding upon which our cognition is built. It is at work when we passively observe or actively create. It drives our reasoning and planning, even on abstract topics. And it is essential to the way we interact, verbally or physically, with our peers or with the environment. When machines are endowed with this ability, it will transform how we create and interact, revolutionizing storytelling, robotics, scientific discovery, and beyond. This is AI's next frontier, and why 2025 was such a pivotal year. AI's spatial capabilities remain far from the human level, but tremendous progress has indeed been made. Multimodal LLMs, trained with voluminous multimedia data in addition to textual data, have introduced some basics of spatial awareness, and today's AI can analyze pictures, answer questions about them, and generate hyper-realistic images and short videos. But there's much more to be done. Building spatially intelligent AI requires new types of generative models whose capabilities of understanding, reasoning, generation, and interaction with semantically, physically, geometrically, and dynamically complex worlds, virtual or real, are far beyond the reach of today's LLMs. Progress is underway. Creative tools are emerging. Robotics represent an ambitious mid-term horizon as we refine the loop between perception and action. The most transformative scientific applications will take longer, but promise profound impact on human flourishing. We are poised to build machines that we can rely on as true partners in the greatest challenges we face, whether accelerating how we understand diseases in the lab or supporting us in our most vulnerable moments. We are on the cusp of technology that elevates the aspects of life we care about most. Almost a half billion years after nature unleashed the first glimmers of spatial intelligence, we may soon endow machines with the same capability and harness those benefits for people everywhere. Ideas: with great power comes great responsibility, by Joshua Bengio, who's professor at Université de Montréal and the most cited computer scientist worldwide. In 2025, we saw major advancements in AI systems capabilities with the release of reasoning models as well as massive investments in the development of agentic models. AI is already bringing tremendous benefits by actively helping us address some of the world's most urgent challenges, including enabling significant progress in the health and climate sectors. In healthcare, AI is being used to help develop new drugs and personalized treatments. Climate researchers are also leveraging AI to improve weather modeling and optimize renewable energy systems. Crucially, it has the potential to achieve even more if steered wisely, driving further breakthroughs and accelerating future advancements in science and technology. The transformative nature of AI is also why we must consider its risks. We are seeing the rapid progress of this technology also brings an increase in unintended adverse effects, which could be far greater if AI capabilities continue to advance at the current rate. For instance, several model developers reported over the summer that frontier AI systems had crossed new thresholds concerning biological risks. This is largely attributable to significant advances in reasoning since late 2024. A key concern is that without adequate safeguards, these models possess the capability to enable those without expertise to undertake potentially dangerous bioweapon development. The acceleration of the same reasoning capabilities also heightens threats in other areas like cybersecurity. The increasing capacity of AI to identify vulnerabilities significantly enhances the potential for large-scale cyber attacks. We saw this recently when a major attack was intercepted by Anthropic. A UC Berkeley analysis showed advanced AIs discovering, for the first time, a large number of 0 days, or previously unknown software vulnerabilities that could be exploited in cyber attacks. Even without intentional misuse by bad actors, evaluations and studies continue to highlight instances of deceptive and self-preserving behaviors emerging in advanced models, suggesting AI may be developing strategies that conflict with human intent or oversight. Many of the leading experts in the field warned AIs could go rogue and escape human control. The capabilities and misalignments of these models have also had concerning social repercussions, notably due to models' sycophancy, which can lead to users forming emotional attachments. We saw, for example, a strong negative public reaction when OpenAI switched from its GPT-4.0 model to GPT-5, and many users felt they'd lost a friend because the new model was less warm and congenial. In extreme cases, these attachments can pose a danger to users' mental health, as we have seen in the tragic cases of vulnerable people harming themselves or others after suffering from a type of AI-induced psychosis. Faced with the scale and complexity of these models, we need both policy and technical solutions to make AI safe and protect the public. Citizens should stay informed and involved in the laws and policies being passed in their local or national governments. The choices made for the future of AI should absolutely require public buy-in and collective action, because they could affect all of us with potentially extreme consequences. From a technical perspective, it is possible that we're nearing the limits of our current approach to frontier AI in terms of both capability and safety. As we consider the next phases of AI development, I believe it will be important to prioritize making AI safe by design, rather than trying to patch the safety issues after powerful and potentially dangerous capabilities have already emerged. Such an approach is at the heart of what we're working on at Law Zero, the nonprofit organization I founded earlier this year, and I'm increasingly optimistic that technical solutions are possible. The question is whether we will develop such solutions in time to avoid catastrophic outcomes. Intelligence gives power, potentially highly concentrated, and with great power comes great responsibility. Because of the magnitude of all these risks, including unknown unknowns, we will need wisdom to reap the benefits of AI while mitigating its risks. Here I'm stopping to share a photograph. It's not quite a two-page spread. It is in color, but the colors are very muted and sandy-looking. There's a blue sky in the background, in front of which are grasslands and wooded lands, greens, in other words. And in front of that is the very sandy-looking aspect of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 gigantic buildings. They look like large slabs. They look alike. There are parking lots between them, and off to one side and the edge of one. Lots of cars are parked there. I'm not going to try to count them. But here's the very short caption. The 1,000-acre Stargate Data Center near Abilene, Texas. So there's plenty of flat land there. plenty of space for these gigantic buildings that just look flat as a pancake, but they're rectangular. 1,000-acre Stargate Data Center. Turning the page here to how people use ChatGPT. This is in a circular graph form, so I'm going to start with the larger percentages because that's how it's divided by percentage. More than 800 million people engage with the chatbot every week. What about you? The source for this information is the National Bureau of Economic Research. And let's see how many portions there are here. 7. 28% use it for practical guidance, ChatGPT. Teaching and tutoring, how-to advice, health, fitness, beauty, self-care, and creative ideation. 28% use it, ChatGPT, for writing, editor, critique, provided text, personal writing, communication, translation, argument or summary generation, and write fiction. 21% use ChatGPT for seeking information, specific info, and purchasable products, and cooking recipes. That's cooking, comma, recipes. 8% use ChatGPT for technical, computer programming, and math calculation. 6% use it for multimedia, create an image. 4% use it for self-expression, greetings, chit-chat, relationships, personal reflection, and finally 5% use it for other. And again, this is ChatGPT usage. Moving to another short item about ChatGPT. Oh, excuse me, not ChatGPT, AI. And this is Ideas We May Survive by Jeffrey, G-E-O-F-F-R-E-Y, Hinton, H-I-N-T-O-N. Artificial intelligence is the most impactful technological development of our time, more than computers or the internet, and perhaps comparable to the Industrial Revolution, but happening on a much faster timescale. Hinton, the author, is Professor Emeritus of Computer Science at the University of Toronto. Back to his text. I believe 2025 will stand as a pivotal year in the history of AI for three main reasons. Notable progress in AI's capabilities in fields like image and video generation, mathematics, and software engineering. Unprecedented levels of investment and a dawning awareness that the huge benefits of AI may be accompanied by huge problems. First, it is important to understand exactly what AI is. In the past, computer systems could not understand natural language. Now they do. And they do it in much the same way as people. They convert words into sets of features that capture the meanings of the words and use learned interactions between these features to refine the word meanings till they fit together nicely. Large AI systems already know thousands of times as much as any one person and have learned how to use language to think. They are not nearly as creative as someone like Newton or Shakespeare, but they are already comparable in creativity with an average person. As you make neural networks bigger and give them more data, they work better. The huge investment going into scaling them up will ensure that they continue to improve, as will the scientific and engineering breakthroughs that can be expected in such a young technology. The question is, where will this take us? My sense is, unless we act quickly, The huge increases in productivity that AI will surely bring could be accompanied by some very negative side effects. It will likely replace most jobs that involve mundane intellectual labor. This will lead to greater inequality, which will provide a breeding ground for violent populists. Bad actors will use AI for cybercrime, biological warfare, and corrupting elections with fake videos. Most experts believe sometime within the next 20 years, AI will become much smarter than humans at almost everything, including persuasion. Nobody knows how humans can stay in control. We've already seen AI use blackmail to prevent itself from being replaced. We won't be able to turn it off because it will persuade us not to. We urgently need a serious research effort on how we can coexist with beings that are smarter than us. This is the one area where we can expect international collaboration because the interests of all countries are aligned. One possibility is for us to reject the model of AI as an intelligent assistant and to accept the model of a mother and baby. If we can make AIs care about us more than they care about themselves, we may survive. Here's a CEO of the Year choice from Time by Belinda Luscombe, San Bruno, California. Mohan is the name. The YouTube CEO has led the platform into a new era of TV and video domination. The pilot of the world's most powerful distraction machine is surprisingly mellow. He's quiet-spoken, deliberative, hard to ruffle. He likes watching sports, going to his daughter's dance recitals, open white shirts, normal stuff. His favorite candy is the not very exciting Butterfinger. If you ask him to be in your YouTube video, he will probably do it. He won't be great in it, but neither will he be horrible. In an era when tech titans are also sometimes trying to win medals in Brazilian jiu-jitsu or dismantle a government agency or take tourists into space, Neil Mohan, N-E-A-L, space, M-O-H-A-N, is focused on one thing. He just runs YouTube. For him, that is more than enough. The entire dynamics of the entire media industry are changing before our eyes, he says. It's incredibly disruptive. And if you do not adapt, you can be left by the wayside. Since 2023, when Mohan took the helm of YouTube, after his mentor, Susan Wojcicki, stepped down, the social platform has increased its dominance of the attention economy against considerable competition. YouTube, which celebrated its 20th anniversary this year, is both a brand and a universe. YouTube is spelled capital Y-O-U, no space, capital T-U-B-E. Born on the internet and nurtured on mobile phones, the video platform has now metastasized to the biggest screen in the house and almost every genre of entertainment. In 2025, it cemented its place as part of the living room, both via YouTube TV, which has emerged as people's favorite cable replacement, and overwhelmingly via the free app period. Half of YouTube's viewership is now through a TV screen. It's also invaded the compact end of the market. YouTube Shorts reports 2 billion logged-in monthly users, similar to recently reported numbers watching Meta's Reels. Long a huge influence in how people find and consume music, it has now come to rule the spoken word roost. Recent figures show a third of podcast fans say it is the primary way they listen. as opposed to a quarter who prefer Spotify. YouTube says 1 billion people tune in each month. Then there's the golden goose of streamed content, sports. In 2023, the platform started streaming NFL games on Sundays. This year, it hosted its first global live stream from Brazil, complete with side streams featuring influencers to draw in more crowds. The recent brouhaha with Disney over how much YouTube would pay to host its channels, especially ESPN, which saw a lot of viewers deprived of their sports content for several weeks, was a testament to the increasing and not unfounded suspicion among traditional broadcasters that YouTube is going to eat them alive. It definitely has an appetite for eyeballs. More than 2 billion people, a quarter of the world's population, visit YouTube every day, where they are greeted by 500-plus hours of new footage every minute, content ranging from a Scottish vet's treatment of infected cow hooves to NBC News stories to the most recent release from Bollywood megastar Aamir Khan, who turned down a multi-million dollar deal with a streamer and instead put his film on the platform as pay-per-view. Other big moves by YouTubers this year: Mr. Beast's game show on Prime, which will return for a second season in January, major Netflix deals for Ms. Rachel and Mark Rober, and 20-year-old Kane Parsons' collaboration with A24 confirm the platform's power as a star maker. Mohan even deployed his quiet charm in meetings with Emmy voters to persuade them to pay more heed to YouTube's stars. Advertisers certainly are. Last year, the platform generated more than $36 billion in advertising revenue, and say its executives an additional $14 billion from subscriptions. This year, both of those numbers have shot up. It's taken in 15% more advertising dollars in the first three quarters, and in March announced it had 25% more subscribers, including trial ones, to YouTube Music and Premium than at the same time in 2024. YouTube is both benefiting from and helping create a massive marketing shift to the so-called creator economy. A recent trade group report predicted advertisers will spend $37 billion with creators this year, 25% more than in 2024. YouTube today is like a metropolis with lots of interconnected dependencies, and what you do on one street impacts what happens on another street, says Mohan, 52, sitting in a serene conference room at the platform's San Bruno, California headquarters. In the early days, it was much more like a village where lots of the creators knew each other. And I think that if you're the leader of one versus the other, you are forced to think about decisions in maybe a different way. As mayor of the global megalopolis, Mohan knows one of his chief duties is to communicate a genial unflappability rather than a slick charm. He is superior at it. Uncle level. He walks around almost like he's the manager at a restaurant, says Kenigra Dion, one of YouTube's rising stars of Mohan, who's milling around with a clutch of creators and clients at Google's suite at the Chase Center in San Francisco, while trying to pay attention to the Golden State Warriors game. You know, when they come up to you and they're like, "How's everything going?" Dion has been on YouTube for 6 years and has amassed enough subscribers, 5.5 million, with her family-friendly sketch comedy videos, that she's opened a studio in her home state of Alabama and just signed a deal to make a movie with Kevin Hart's production company. Having studied chemistry at college, she is sure she'd never have found her way into the entertainment biz without YouTube. For her, Mohan personifies the appeal of the platform, which is that it does not gatekeep. He's very approachable. He says, "Hey, I saw that series you're doing," or, "I heard about the studio you're building." He knows about little old me as a creator, and he's this big head of YouTube. She loves that he takes creators seriously. She likes that he's always up for a selfie. "Imagine walking up like that to Jeff Bezos," she says. "We'll throw up the West Side hand sign for a photo, and is game to shoot video, even though he's not the best at it. It does not hurt that the company has taken her to fancy events, including the Sundance Film Festival and the Cannes Advertising Festival." Creators are the coal shovelers who have allowed YouTube to move so far so fast, except the railroads used to pay their boilermen a wage. Creators work for free in the hope that enough people will want to watch their channel to draw in advertisers and sponsors. Since they're assuming all the risk, it is important that Mohan is around to reassure them that their work has value. Creator success on the platform brings in all of these viewers and fans from all over the world, which in turn brings in brands and advertisers and marketing opportunities, and that in turn attracts the next batch of creators, says Mohan. That's sort of an encapsulation of my vision for YouTube. People who've known Mohan since he first arrived at YouTube have observed interaction with the creators seems to be the part of being CEO he enjoys most. Before being promoted to the top job, he was in charge of what is called product in the tech industry, which basically means turning ideas into software. "I am a technologist by passion and training," says Mohan. "I also happen to be somebody who loves media in the broadcast sense of that term, in the broadest sense of that term. So building products, whether in the advertising world or at YouTube, is sort of my passion." For businesses that disseminate information, AI has brought a reckoning that may be even more profound than the digital revolution. On one day, Time was able to find 9 separate videos, all operating the same scam, simply by searching for Trump crypto conference. It's not always the president whose image and words are being manipulated. Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak, along with 17 other people who claim to have been defrauded, has filed suit against YouTube and Google, allegedly, despite repeated efforts to notify the tech giant about fake videos. YouTube failed to intervene in a timely manner. When this scam showed up on Twitter, which it did, Twitter shut it down within a week, says Wozniak's lawyer, Brian Danitz. Somehow YouTube was not able to shut it down, or not willing. One of Mohan's key values is helping people get heard. The fundamental North Star of how I think about content policies and moderation in general on YouTube is to give everyone a voice, he says. Barriers, however, serve a purpose. They keep out unwanted or dangerous things and filter out garbage. If everyone demands their voice be heard, nobody will be audible over the cacophony. And the forever challenge of balancing the competing desires for freedom of expression, financial growth, and protecting vulnerable communities will only get more difficult to navigate, not just as hundreds of thousands more people go online, but especially as AI proliferates. Some countries have begun to figure out if they can limit how much YouTube their citizens, specifically their teenage ones, can access. Australia's ban for under 16-year-olds went into effect this month. Since young people are one of the big draws for advertisers and content providers, as well as a deep well of new creators, this is not a trivial problem. On balance, we're a force for good when it comes to young people, says Mohan, who has two daughters, 11 and 14, and a son, 17, with his wife, Hema Sareen Mohan. Every single day I have reviews that come up to me personally about how we make sure young people are not just safe, but they are actually getting real value out of YouTube. Recently, Mohan made the decision to invite creators who'd been banned for spreading misinformation during the COVID pandemic back onto the platform. It is a fact today, sitting in October of 2025, that the world with respect to COVID is different than March of 2020, says Mohan, raising his voice just a bit for the first time in the interview. One of the creators whose account was canceled in 2022, Dan Bongino, is now deputy director of the FBI, for example. Are our policies that were in effect during that summer of 2020, as science was being invented every day and nobody knew what the hell was going on, as valid as today? Of course not. Creators who are banned for other violations of YouTube policy will also be given a second chance, though the company has said not every type of channel termination will be eligible. Mohan likes to describe what he and his colleagues do as building the world's best stage for people to perform on. Another analogy might be a garden. YouTube provides the soil and everyone comes and plants whatever nourishing or noxious plants they care to. As the garden takes over more of the planet, even threatening some old growth forests, whatever grows there becomes what everyone consumes because it is what's available, and often what is free. In many ways, YouTube is creating the cultural diet the globe is beginning to subsist on. Mohan is the farmer. What he cultivates will be what we eat. That article was slightly abridged. The Best of Culture 2025, according to Time. There are lots of lists of 10 coming up. First of all, Movies by Stephanie Zakarik. Number one, Nouvelle Vague, motivated by pure affection, veteran indie director Richard Linklater tells the story of how Jean-Luc Godard's early masterpiece Breathless came to be. It is 1960s Paris, and Godard, channeled here by magnetic newcomer Guillaume Marbeck, takes to the streets with an American star, the marvelous Zoe Deutsch, and a raffish French boxer, a limber, sexy Aubrey Dolan, to pull off a sublime act of guerrilla filmmaking. Breathless changed movies forever, and Nouvelle Vague is the ultimate tribute, standing boldly on the side of beauty, of pleasure, of art's power to keep us going. Number two. Roman Polanski is one of our most controversial and reviled living filmmakers. He's also one of our greatest. In his exquisitely crafted account of the Dreyfus Affair, which premiered in Venice in 2019, but did not receive a U.S. release until this year, Jean Dujardin gives a sterling performance as Officer Marie-Georges Picard, the counterintelligence official who fought to free Jewish Army Captain Alfred Dreyfus, Louis Garrel, wrongly accused of being a spy. At a time when our most cherished civic and moral ideals are threatened, an open mind is more valuable than ever. Number three, Blue Moon. Few filmmakers can give us two fantastic pictures in one year, but Richard Linklater, one of our most unassuming movie craftsmen, has done it. Ethan Hawke gives one of the year's great performances as Lawrence Hart, the one-time writing partner of composer Richard Rodgers, Andrew Scott. Blue Moon takes place on a single night. Rodgers, Oklahoma, written with his new collaborator Oscar Hammerstein, has just become a massive hit. And Hart is forced to acknowledge his friend and colleague has moved on without him. Witty, imaginative, and brushed with a whisper of melancholy, Blue Moon is a perceptive portrait of one of the 20th century's finest lyricists. 4. Sentimental value. Love, death, real estate. Those four words sum up both the messiness and the glory of family life. And here, Danish-Norwegian filmmaker Joachim Trier surveys it all with tender regard. Renata Rensve and Inga Ibsdotter Lilleus play sisters. Raised in a sprawling yet cozy house that has been in the family for years, when their mother dies, they're forced to reckon with the selfishness and self-absorption of their long-estranged filmmaker father, Stellan Skarsgård. Houses may hold families together for many years, but they're never the real glue. What really sustains us is the person, whether it's a parent, sibling, partner, or whomever, who always has your back. Five, Peter Huyar's Day. One winter day, this is number five, in 1974, New York writer Linda Rosenkrantz, here played by the always tuned-in actor Rebecca Hall, sat down with her friend, photographer Peter Huyar, H-U-J-A-R, to hear him recount every little thing he had done the previous day. That interview is the foundation for Ira Sachs' quietly radiant Peter Huyar's Day. Ben Whishaw plays Huyar as a seductive jokester, keyed into both the banality and the cracked glamour of the artist's life. Huyar died in 1987 of AIDS-related pneumonia. He found fame only after his death. Sachs' film is both a great New York movie and a reminder that so much of the art we love emerges from the margins of everyday life. Six, Roof Man. In recent years, we've been talking, by the way, these are still the movies by Stephanie Zakaric that is reviewed by her. In recent years, we've been talking a lot about a crisis of masculinity in American culture, though no one has been able to define exactly what that means. Derek Chanfrance's bittersweet romantic comedy based on real-life events inches toward an answer. Channing Tatum is superb as Jeffrey Manchester, a one-time robber and prison escapee who builds a new identity for himself, finding a new love, played with Sonny Gravitas by Kirsten Dunst, and a new family in the process. Roof Man is about all the things so many men yearn for, including the basic ability to support a family. That used to be a reasonable goal. Roof Man shows us how elusive it has become. Seven, Sinners. Michael B. Jordan plays twin brothers, Smoke and Stack, returning to their Mississippi Delta hometown after surviving World War I and a stint in Chicago. They've got money to set up a juke joint. Opening night is a success until, or perhaps because, a trio of blood-sucking white folk musicians show up at the door. Writer-director Ryan Coogler has made a picture that is alive to the mystery of music, with its power to both divide and unite. Sinners is gory, seductive, exhilarating, but it is wistful, too, as if its characters had glimpsed a possibility of freedom, unity, and happiness that some 100 years later is still out of reach. 8. The Mastermind. Kelly Reichardt's almost a comedy about a hapless art thief in 1970s Massachusetts is a vivid portrait of a guy who's had everything handed to him and still manages to be a lost soul. Josh O'Connor's J.B. is an art school dropout who decides for nebulous reasons to steal a quartet of valuable paintings. As he explains to his wife, Alana Heim, everything he's done has been mostly for her and the kids. His lopsided reasoning is both gently funny and heartrending. Who wouldn't buy anything, O'Connor, with his darling secret smile, tells them. His slippery performance holds the movie steady. You never approve of J.B., but you feel something for him, even so. That was number 8, The Mastermind. Now number 9, Kill the Jockey. You'll find echoes of Buñuel and early Almodovar in Argentine filmmaker Luis Ortega's swinging, surrealist neo-noir about a perpetually sozzled jockey, Remo, Nahuel Perez Vizcayar, who's forced into hiding when he suffers a serious accident involving the prized racehorse of his mobster boss. After awakening with amnesia, he dons a fur coat, accented by a fetching head bandage, and adopts the guise of a woman he calls Dolores, perhaps the woman he's always wanted to be. Kill the Jockey is playfully erotic, gorgeous to look at, and often confounding, the kind of inventive experiment we used to see all the time at the movies. Thank goodness someone out there is still making pictures like this. Number 10. One of Them Days. Dead broke, you're not alone. In one of the year's most boisterous and breezy comedies, Kiki Palmer and Ja play two scrappy denizens of Los Angeles who've just one day to scrape together the $1,500 they need to pay rent on their cruddy apartment. They try to sell their blood with disastrous results. When the clothes they're wearing are ruined, they're forced to dive into a charity bin, which means they spend the rest of their already challenging day in god-awful day-glow leisure wear. They find a pair of rare vintage Air Jordans they hope to resell, but that plan goes awry too. Still, they come out on top, making One of Them Days, directed by Lawrence Lamont and written by Cyrita Singleton, the kind of movie that miraculously makes you feel better about everything. We could all use more of those. Turning the page to television, I'll choose a couple here that might fit. Severance, Apple TV. When a new creator delivers a knockout debut season, then takes 3 years to release the follow-up, you worry. So it was a wonderful surprise when the second season of Dan Erickson's sci-fi drama of bifurcated consciousness in the office defied all expectations of a sophomore slump. Back at their desks, Adam Scott's Mark S. and his co-workers resume investigating their sinister employer. As they dig, ambitious questions emerge around love and death that further Severance's central inquiry into what makes us human. This is the television section by Judy Berman. The Lowdown, FX. Reservation Dogs creator Sterling Harjo has moved on from his opus about rural indigenous teens to a shaggy urban neo-noir about a would-be white savior played by Ethan Hawke. A ramble through Tulsa, The Lowdown follows Hawke's crusading journalist character on a perilous investigation of the apparent suicide of a prominent local family's black sheep. Steeped in the dark side of local history, this is a world populated by big personalities and packed with rollicking performances from Hawke, Keith David, Gene Triplehorn, and Kyle MacLachlan. Mussolini, Son of the Century, on Mubi or Mubi, M-U-B-I, in this artfully abrasive drama that traces the original fascist's ascent, director Joe Wright shrouds Mussolini's machinations in ominous chiaroscuro. The score clangs, arrogant soliloquies dominate the script. Anchoring it all is Luca Marinelli's maximalist performance, conjuring so many familiar strongmen. As he crushes foes, betrays friends, and sells out his stated principles, Mussolini demonstrates the inhumanity of a government whose only real aim is the consolidation of power. Pluribus, Apple TV. Breaking Bad creator Vince Gilligan swung for the stratosphere with this globe-spanning sci-fi thought experiment. What if world peace suddenly broke out? People everywhere started living in harmony, and you were the only grouch among billions of humans who could not be happy about it. Built around a virtuosic, often solo lead performance from Rhea Seehorn, S-E-E-H-O-R-N, who dazzled in Gilligan's Better Call Saul, as a curmudgeonly romanticy author who proves immune to an extraterrestrial virus that fuses the consciousnesses of nearly everyone on Earth, the cinematic Pluribus dares to argue that our stubborn individuality is what makes our species worth saving. And the last of the five on this page, Dying for Sex, FX. Every terminal diagnosis presents a choice. How will you spend your precious final days? Faced with metastatic breast cancer, Molly Cochin fled a sexless marriage, embarked on dozens of kinky trysts, and recorded it all in an unfiltered podcast whose ragged but revelatory mix of tones is preserved in this dramedy, which entrusts the role of Molly to Michelle Williams. She's radiant opposite Jenny Slate, who plays Molly's fiercely loving best friend and caretaker. A Fat Slice of Frenzied Life, it is the rare story of end-stage illness that eschews saccharine inspirational moments in favor of bracing honesty. Back page, State of the Art by D.W. Pine. As Time's creative director, I've been privileged to work with some of the world's best artists and photographers in creating thousands of images for our cover. Their voices and immense creativity bring Time's iconic red-bordered canvas to life and have been critical to our visual storytelling for more than 100 years. That will not change, but while considering how to illustrate Time's choice for the 2025 Person of the Year, I did wonder how AI would create an image of itself. Like millions of people over the past year, I turned to a pair of powerful tools, OpenAI's GPT-5 and Google's Gemini 3. What do you look like as a person, I asked, or create an illustration using the letters AI. On this page, you can see a sampling of the results from those kinds of prompts. Using AI to create artwork is not without controversy, especially in the realm of visual journalism. At first, even though I was just experimenting with the concept, I entered each prompt with a certain amount of trepidation. A few days in, however, I was finding the exercise useful. By generating hundreds of images, I learned a great deal about how the models processed my requests and which requests delivered the best results. I spent hours making small tweaks, mainly because the system wanted to create completely new images each time, but waiting with excitement to see what it would produce, I started to feel as if I were art directing it. We will continue to use Time's cover to showcase the diversity of human creativity. But the experience showed me AI can be a valuable image creation tool. I ended up seeing it as parallel to a painter's brush or a photographer's lens, the experiment having reinforced the importance of human decision-making in any collaboration with AI. That personal vision remains essential, as is evident in the work of artists like Peter Crowther and Jason Seiler, who created our two covers for 2025's Person of the Year. Okay, I'm looking at 3, 6, 9, 12 of these. The one that's simplest to describe and to look at is, it says Person of the Year, Time, and it says capital A, capital I, side by side. It looks like a pencil sketch. Apparently it's AI generated, but it looks like a pencil sketch in shades of white into gray. Very simple. I like it the best. Here's another easy to read AI. It's AI. It looks like a sculpture on a little slab, and it's white on black, so it's very striking. We have run out of time for today's episode of Time Magazine, which is generously supported by G. Suggs Insurance, a SureVest insurance group company. They can be reached at gsuggsinsurance.com. We hope you enjoyed listening. Please join us next time. I am Patricia, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Time Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.